This is the UCEM Good News Podcast, a podcast providing heartwarming and inspirational stories during these uncertain times. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the second episode of the UCEM Good News Podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Gary Poulton. Hi, Gary.
Morning. How are you doing, Andrew? You okay? Nice to join you this morning.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, considering. Adjusting to new ways of life, and we'll see what the next announcement holds for us.
Yep, hopefully good news. Speaking of which, Gary recently gained a distinction from our MSc in Construction Management. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. It was a nice email to receive, I must admit. So, yeah, looking forward to the graduation now.
Yeah, which we hope will be as soon as we can host it, of course, under the current restrictions. And seeing as this is a podcast focusing on good news during these times, Gary's achievement seems a good place to start. We've had students sharing positive exam results over the past few months. And with the usual celebration modes unavailable, you know, you might have maybe gone to the pub, gone to a restaurant, whatever it might have been. I just first of all wanted to ask, you know, what are celebrations like, you know, for such good news at this time? How did you celebrate?
Well, to be fair, I'm married with two children, and all three of them have been very understanding over the last couple of years to get through the MSc and to do it properly. Obviously, I've had to dedicate quite a lot of personal time to that on top of a full-time job as well. So it was nice just to be able to sort of celebrate and share the success, not only with my family, but my employer as well, who obviously supported me all the way through. So whilst it was all remotely, we managed to share it quite intimately in a nice way.
That's good. Yeah, you just don't know whether it's something you just have with food, but the fact you've been able to share it with those people who've supported you during your journey is great. Because that's your employer, that's Whitbread PLC, correct?
That's right, yeah. Whitbread PLC, who were the parent company for Premier Inn Hotels. I think, you know, likes of video conferencing and things like that, whilst you can't physically see people, at least you can get them up on the screen. And we had a celebrate success team meeting, which was quite a nice thing that they did for me. So yeah, whilst I can't physically see people, virtually seeing people, it's been a big help.
And that's great. Obviously, you know, we're lucky that we do live in a time where we've got internet connection and we can still connect with people. Odd circumstances as it is currently, you know, that's the culmination of a few years of hard study to complete your MSc. I mean, how did you find studying with UCEM?
Well, first of all, I thought it was fantastic. It's obviously a different way of learning, in distance learning. I'd say, you know, 99% of what we did was all online. So the challenges were you need to be very self-motivated, you need to allocate your time accordingly. But on the flip side of that, it allowed flexibility in terms of managing my work life, family life and university life. Because it was well planned out, we knew what was expected from each term and semester. I could sort of plan my time accordingly and allow the course to work around my diary, as opposed to, I suppose, physically having to attend various places at a certain date. So, yeah, it was a challenge in terms of self-motivating and allocating the time, but a massive benefit in terms of the flexibility that allowed me to base my studies around sort of normal life.
And you talked there about, you know, the self-motivation you have to have. You know, we also have a big staff base at UCEM. I mean, how do you find the support you received from members of staff, whether that was academic or, you know, other teams we have?
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And just because the course is based online, one thing I'd always say is there's always someone on the end of the phone as well, whether that be a administrative request in terms of help around the computer system, in terms of accessing course material, etc. All the tutors, course leaders, all these kind of people, they'd be available on an online messaging system, or, you know, if you really wanted them, they'd give you a mobile phone number or a landline phone number as well to contact them. So whilst it was predominantly based online, there was always someone on the end of the phone to support me, no matter what the time. So again, the flexibility in terms of the messaging system, if I was working on a weekend, I could still drop a message during that time, and I felt 100% supported, yes. So it's a great experience.
Well, very glad to hear that. And, you know, as you mentioned, it's an online course. Have you studied online before? Was that something new? And how did you find the virtual learning environment we host?
Yeah, I mean, my previous degree, that was for a traditional university over, 3-4 years. To answer your question, no, I've never really done an online course to this magnitude. I've done, you know, little bits and bobs in terms of what we do in the work environment for training courses, etc., but not to sort of this part of the degree. But yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I think, you know, during this time, during lockdown as well, I think people are getting a lot more confident now in terms of working virtually, interacting virtually, learning virtually. So for me, it worked quite well. You know, I'm quite confident in terms of learning myself and accessing the material and stuff. And if anything, I think this current environment has shown the power of virtual learning. And I think, you know, dare I say, it could be the future and the way forward.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, the higher education sector itself is you know, reeling, obviously, from what's happening, and quite a lot are sort of trying to get onto the online learning mode. So that's something which we've been running for a number of years, and obviously is a good thing for us at the moment. But like you say, definitely could be how many more decide to do this in future, and you know, maybe future proof themselves as organisations, which you know, no one could have forecast this. But but yeah, online learning can certainly be a powerful tool at this time, so that people can still progress with their studies, maybe if they can't even see each other at the same time. I mean, you started in 2017. So I wanted to know, how did you come across UCEM and the course back then and decide to study with us?
I suppose just taking it back to the start, really. So my original background was in business and computer science. That was my original degree. And at the time, that's the sort of way I thought I wanted to go. And I actually fell into the world of property and construction. I got on the Tesco graduate course, and I went in there to as a more of a business role, looking at internal processes and efficiencies, etc. But just by chance, I landed up in the property team in terms of reviewing there. But when I got there, I just sort of got exposed to the world of property. And I suppose I found my natural passion and my enjoyment in terms of what I enjoy and what gets me out of bed and what motivates me by chance, really. And Tesco, credit to them at the time, they were very good as in terms of encouraging you, developing you, and they could see I had a passion for it and took me through that way. 7 good years at Tesco, you know, a combination of developing new stores, maintaining stores, extending stores, etc. Then had a fantastic opportunity to join a great company called Whitbread, who were the parent company for Premier Inn. And they've got a very challenging and exciting development program in terms of new hotels across the country. And I was lucky to say, look, you know, my degree's in business and computer science, and whilst I've been working in this industry for, you know, 12 years, if not longer, it'd be great to sort of have that sort of educational title, I suppose, as well, but also to learn new skills and new tools that would help my sort of day-to-day life. And Whitbread were very fantastic. They supported me in that request. You know, they've got a good respect for the university, and they recommended, because I'm doing a challenging job at the same time, to have that flexible opportunity in terms of distance location, distance working, and that's where we worked together. And it was a 2-year course, and I'm pleased to say that I did it exactly in that 2 years and no longer. But yeah, so it was a nice win-win, really, because the course is so wide. It went from everything from finance to law to technical skills, and literally every single module that I worked on has had a positive impact on my day-to-day life and work.
I mean, yeah, that was going to be my next question, but you seem to have covered it there. But, you know, about how the degree has helped with your work. But as you mentioned there, that seems to be the case, that it has really had a positive impact in your day-to-day work and life. So yeah, I mean, like I say, you kind of wrap that up in that respect.
Yeah, well, the thing about the course was as well, it sort of got you thinking. And, you know, we used to do things day by day because that's the way we've always done them. But then looking at various modules, as again, whether it be a finance challenge or a technical challenge, it just got something that got the brain working, and you know, you could adapt it in, you know, real life.
Like I say, we're very glad that, you know, it's made that impact on your career and your work, and that is exactly what our degrees are for, basically. Whether it's someone who's earlier in their career and they want to gain a job within the built environment, or more predominantly with our student base, it tends to be those who are already working in the sector. And this is a way of really solidifying your knowledge and your skills, which you can, you know, work with on a day-to-day basis. And you know, obviously very happy that you've been able to do that whilst working in a very demanding role. And like I say, quite a few of our students are in a similar position. And speaking of demanding roles, it's a nice little segue onto our section about a well-known TV programme. Because when you did share the news on Twitter, noticed that there was a blue tick next to your name, and you know, made me think, oh well, let's have a look at who this person is. And lo and behold, there you are, photo from The Apprentice, and yeah, the 2011 series, or rather series 11 it was in 2015, was the series you featured on. And not only featured, but you got through to the final round, where you give you a business proposal. And, you know, out of a strong field of candidates, didn't quite get the apprentice role. But, you know, there was that was the year which Joseph Valent was the winner. We had Vanna Koutsimitis. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but she was the runner up in that series. So one which I'm sure many of our listeners would have watched at the time. So, yeah, got to ask a few questions about that, I think. You know, first of all, how do you look back on that experience?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it's 2015, Series 11, so it was 5 years ago, five years younger, different haircut then. I have had a lockdown haircut, I must admit, so I do look a bit different to how I was 5 years ago. But in answer to your question, nothing but fond memories. As you say, it was Series 11, so I had a pretty good idea in terms of what I was walking into. I realised the format of the show and what they want viewers to see. Mm. Who doesn't enjoy laughing at an apprentice candidate? I think that sort of makes the show, really. So I had a good idea in terms of what I was working to, but there's a hell of a lot that goes on behind the scenes that people don't see. I was away from home without a mobile phone for 8 weeks, and I don't think, you know, to take a mobile phone off someone for 8 weeks these days is pretty much unheard of. We was restricted to like one 10-minute phone call a week to family. So there's a lot more of a challenge to it than you actually see on the physical screens. But the production crew, they were fantastic in my series. I think they're still current now. We had obviously Lord Sugar, Karen Brady and Claude Bittner, who, you know, they're tough, but they're fantastic. They really are. I think sometimes they just get a bit frustrated because they want people to do well. They want, you know, want people to progress. Despite what you see on the boardroom and a few challenging conversations between the candidates, you know, there's no one I had an issue with in my series. And, you know, everyone was, you know, seems to be doing great things themselves now. We still keep in touch through various media channels. So, yeah, it was a great experience. You know, people say to me, what's the best thing that's come out of the experience? And it was probably the people I met in terms of the network. You know, I met some great people, got close to a few people. And it was one of those experiences, I suppose, that money can't buy, really. And something that I'll never forget.
That's a really interesting anecdote you say there about how you weren't allowed your phone and you only had 10 minutes per day. Because, yeah, that wasn't something I was aware of for a week. I mean, why was that then? Is that because they're testing you so that you are, you know, going to be up to the standard required? Or do you think that's more of a TV production kind of decision to perhaps, I don't know, maybe cynically thinking to create a bit more of a tense environment, which actually might make better TV? I don't know if I'm being harsh there, but yeah, just kind of intrigued on why that would be.
Yeah, I think the whole point about creating a tense environment, I think that's throughout. I mean, there's not much sleep. Mm. I mean, one of the biggest questions people always ask to me, oh, you really got 20 minutes when that phone gets to get ready? You have, it's literally, I remember the first night, you know, it was all excited, you know, this environment, we've seen the boardroom in real life when we got welcomed by Lord Sugar. I think we went to bed about 1 o'clock in the morning. The phone was going at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we was at a fish market buying fish at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I think creating that tense environment is right, but it's almost like I want to give people a true test, really. But yeah, I think the answer to the question in terms of the phone situation, I think there's a lot to the success of The Apprentice is that the confidentiality, and people don't know the results week in, week out. I mean, when I went on there, I had to sign a contract about that thick, about non-disclosure and confidentiality, because it is filmed in advance. It's not a live show. It's filmed around sort of April to July time, and it goes on the telly from October to December. But also, you know, a lot of the tasks are about running around London, finding bits and bobs. There's no Google Maps. There's none of this challenging people. And I suppose if people had their mobile phones whilst they're in their downtime in the bedrooms, you know, you could use it to your advantage, texting people at home and stuff like that. So I think it's more of a confidentiality thing, really, and trying people not to cheat, really, the system. They don't want people to be Googling things. They want the content. I'm trying on the task at hand. And I think also as well, when you're there, they want you there present, and you're there to film The Apprentice, not to, right, okay, I'll do The Apprentice now, do a few emails on the night, speak to a family. It's like you're there for one reason and one reason only.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, the logistics side, that, you know, which makes sense that, like you say, you could be researching stuff or like you say, you know, the possibility of cheating, which they wouldn't want a Big Brother Series 1 type scenario. So, that's an interesting insight. And particularly the fact that, you know, going to bed at 1 a.m. your first night, and then 2 hours later, you know, not only you're being woken up, but, you know, I can think of few worse places than a fish market to go at that time in the morning. So, I mean, on that front, I mean, every day, every week, there would be the phone go off. I mean, how loud is that to wake you up?
It's pretty loud, but whoever answers the phone, they're very loud. Yeah, I think they're very excited. It's like, wake up. And you literally, you know, you do have that 20 minutes just to get ready, throw a suit on. Next thing you know, you've got a camera thrown in front of your eyes and going, right then, Gary, what do you think about the task? I'm like, so, whilst everyone wants to laugh at candidates on the show, I certainly have a lot more sympathy for those over the last few years now, because it is tough. You know, it's easy to criticise what people do and what people don't do on there. But I suppose unless you've actually truly experienced it, you don't realise how tough and challenging it is.
I think you can see that, and it's not the kind of work you would be expecting to doing. And you've got people from all different, you know, backgrounds. Obviously, your background in property and the built environment, and others who come from different sectors. And then, yeah, you're flogging fish, say, on your first one. So it's really, as they kind of say on it, you know, the whole package, I suppose, they're looking for. And takes you out of your comfort zone, certainly seems to be the thing. So, no, it's only respect, I think, that most people would have once they've laughed at maybe some of the more bullish statements given at the start of the series. A few weeks in, it tends to be a little less bullish, and the true sort of colours come through. And obviously for yourself, you got all the way to the end. And I think I read that it was the first series where the business proposal was given at the end. Is that correct? Or there was something slightly different. Maybe I'm wrong with that. But, you did share your business proposal. I mean, can you remind me what the business proposal was?
Yeah, it was, I don't think it's the first year, but it was one of the first few years, because I think the original series of The Apprentice was you got a £100,000 a year job with working for Lord Sugar. And then they slightly changed it in terms of the one a business proposal. So for me, that was my mistake. I did all right in the various tasks. I performed all right. A few little bits. I think I scraped through one round very close. I thought the finger was coming. But I think I went into the show. There was 18 candidates in my year, and I think all 17 of the 18 was what are called true entrepreneurs who had their own businesses. And then you had one person who'd worked for a big corporate organisation, i.e. Tesco, and that was me. And I think I tried to overthink it. I'd worked in property the majority of my sort of working life. But as part of the application, I was trying to be like too entrepreneurial and come up with a business. And I ended up going, basing my application and my progress through the world that I've done in Tesco and property. And then totally left field, out of the blue, my business proposal was all about an events business and an online entertainment. Mm. So it's two totally different. But the link behind that is that's what my dad does for a business. He's got a very successful entertainment business, which I've supported in and out with over the years. But it was almost like, right, 1 minute you've been here for 10 weeks talking about property, and then all that out of the blue, your business proposal is all about online entertainment. So it was a bit sort of left field, really. But I think that was because I over 40 and I was trying to be too clever and too entrepreneurial, mm. where I should have remained not more authentic. That's probably too harsh on myself, because I found I was very authentic through the show, but I should have remained more consistent and based my business proposal in terms of what I do for a living, and that's building and developing. But it's quite funny, really. I mean, 5 years ago, they got my business proposal out and they said, what? Online entertainment? People are going to sit around online in their houses. I mean, online quizzes, online parties, virtual reality and stuff like that. Gary, this ain't going to happen. What are you thinking of? And then, funny enough, 5 years down the line, what are we all doing?
Yeah. Every week there's a new quiz on Zoom. You know, we're currently speaking on Zoom. You'd have to be Nostradamus or something to have, expected something like this in 5 years. But if you were doing this now, you'd surely be, in line to win in that respect. You know, what we're all doing, everyone is going online. You know, you're seeing Zoom adverts on the TV. It's interesting to say, that you went for something completely different. You had it was a kind of different approach to Joseph, who came, I think, from a plumbing background, and he basically sort of, it was an extension of what he did, but on a larger scale, which I think was the first time maybe Lord Sugar had done something a little bit out of his own comfort zone. I seem to remember him saying. And it's interesting that you can go in with different approaches, and it just shows the different tactics you can have. But, do you look back on that and think, I should have won, or certainly you were in with the chance to have got right to the end. I mean, are there any regrets with it at all?
I try not to have any regrets in anything I do in life, really. Just learning's a bit of a cliche statement, but that's the sort of way I try and look at it. And should I have won? No. I always felt like I let him down. I felt like I performed relatively well in the tasks, and it was something. It was like, oh, Gary, you got a corporate background. I'm not too sure, but I don't know. But there was something there. I think he saw something in me, and that's why he put me through there. And if I knew now, if I knew then what I know now, and went down the property route and proposed some kind of bit of property proposal, I think I might have even snuck into the final two. I really do. But that series was Joseph's series. I got. Very close to Joseph in our bedroom. There was two bedroom with the lads, and Joseph was actually in the bed next door to me, just to keep him awake with my snoring, as he'd kind of remind me. But we grew very close, very, very close. He's still a very good friend of mine now. Came over to my wedding in Ibiza a couple of years ago. But I don't know, he started the series with a few bold statements, and everyone thought he was the joker of the group. But my God, after I got to know him after a few years ago, his drive, his commitment, his willingness to succeed, and his talent, and his knowledge as well. It was a great story. I think by his own admission, I think he left school at an early age, but set up his own business with a van, and Lord Sugar, I think, could see that in him. And I think, to be fair, he was a very sort of deserving winner for our series. And I'm pleased to see him doing well today.
Yeah. I think, how you've described the journey with Joseph is exactly kind of how I remember it. Like you say, at the beginning, people weren't so sure or anything. But as it, went further along, he really seemed to have that, very good attitude. And like you say, a very entrepreneurial spirit in the plumbing sector and stuff. So, like you say, very magnanimous of you as well to say that. But it's great as well that you've shared that. You still keep in touch with them, and it's nice to see that sort of continue and legacy from each of them as well. I mean, I'm sure one of the questions you probably get all the time, but what was Lord Sugar like? I mean, did you, aside from your boardroom showdowns. Did you have much time away from that to really get to speak to him a little bit more? You know, how did you find him?
Yeah, so the way Lord Sugar operates is you see him at the start of the task when he tells you, you know, what he wants us to do. And then the next time you see him, he's sitting in the boardroom. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, he tells you how it is. One thing that you don't really see on the TV is, you know, the show on TV is an hour long, with the task probably taking 30, 35 minutes, and then the actual boardroom taking sort of 20 minutes at the end. But that boardroom takes all day. It literally, if you're in the bottom three, you're coming out there late. So you do have a lot of time. And Lord Sugar, especially at the start, he's actually a very, very funny guy. He's very, very funny guy. He's very sharp. You know, he's very quick. Don't get me wrong, he probably plans a few things that he wants to say, but he comes at you very, very quick. But I've got nothing but respect about him. I'm not just saying that just for the sake of it. I think he genuinely wants people to do well. And, you know, the good thing about him as well, if you do something wrong, he'll tell you. But if you do something, you know, relatively okay, he'll compliment you as well. He's the perfect man for that role. And you can see he's the kind of person that if you did work for him or with him, you just want to do really, really well for him. And, you know, the wealth of his experience, knowledge and contacts as well, you know, he's a great guy. He spent a lot more time with Karen and Claude. So depending on if they was looking after the one team or the other team, they'd be with you all the way throughout the task, really. And again, there was sort of like great people. They can't sort of get too emotionally attached to the candidates because they're there to sort of be Lord Sugar's aid and you know, say one way or the other. But, you know, Karen's, you know, tells it straight, but just after I finished filming, it was, it was around December time, it was on TV, and I was actually at Aston Villa v West Ham United on Boxing Day, and I bumped into Karen Boxing Day, and it's, you know, it was quite a nice moment, really, seeing her without a camera on us, and she was a really, really nice lady, and you know, she was asking me how I got on and all that kind of stuff. And Claude only sent me a message on Twitter the other day. Lord Sugar still follows me on Twitter, so if I want to send him a DM, asking for a bit of advice, that opportunity is there. So they're fantastic people, and it was great just to spend, you know, 8 weeks with these kind of people.
Yeah, and to have, great that you can stay in contact with them, and you could maybe send a little prompt to Lord Sugar saying, well, you know, the idea I had back then, what do you think now, eh? But yeah, obviously Karen Brady, like you say, tends to be quotes about West Ham at the moment and how the season is going to resume or whatever with that, which is another huge thing which we won't go into. But yeah, I think one of the things which really stands out and is enjoyable is seeing, you know, they're very stern, they have to be, they're assessing you, all this kind of stuff, but those little moments where there's a look, you know, they give when they found something funny or they think, hold on a minute, you know, why are you doing that? I think those moments as well are a real sort of great part of the show. And yeah, obviously, initially, that was Nick and Margaret who were great at those little looks they would give, as they wouldn't give much else away, it seemed, watching it. So that's great. I mean, I'm sure it was, but, you know, was it a life-changing experience? And if so, sort of how has your life changed since then?
I don't think I was prepared for just how much it was. I mean, it's a surreal experience. I left the house to go down to London and at the end of April. I come home end of June. But, like, no one knows where you've been. A lot of my friends was like, well, where's Gary? Like, you know, he's not been around for 8 weeks. He's not answered his phone for 8 weeks. And you're not allowed to tell people what you've been up to. So I think a few conflicting stories that said it. And then you don't forget about it. But then you have to, you know, you come back home, but you've still got to get on with your life. You've still got to earn money. You've still got to just get on with things. And then from July to October, you're sort of working, doing your normal life, but knowing sort of like what's to come. And then obviously October comes out. It's a big surprise to a lot of people, especially people on your Facebook that you know, probably don't speak to day in, day out. They're like, wow, like, you know, I didn't realise you was on this. And then as each week progresses, you start to notice a lot more in sort of like day-to-day life. If you think about it, at the start of the show, there's 18 candidates and there's an hour. to show those people. But towards the end of the show, there's still an hour, but there's only five people. And obviously people have got to know you and understand what you've been doing over the last 10 weeks or whatever it is. And I think, you know, someone said to them, because, you know, you get people standing up to you in the street going, oh, are you Gary, off your Bentley's, all that kind of stuff. And it's quite nice because everyone who did come up to me, really, it was only either friendly banter or it's quite positive things that people said. So it was quite a nice feeling, really. I think people get the wrong impression. I think, like, when you're on there, that you're some, like, you know, everyone's a multi-million pound businessman and all that kind of stuff, which is far from the truth. But someone said to me, they said, Gary, like, how many people are in the UK? I said, I don't know, about 60, 65 million people. Like, yeah. So how many people watch The Apprentice? So what, about 10, 11 million people, something like that. He said, so in theory, one in six people in the country know who you are. And then when he said about that, it was a bit of a, you know, I can understand why now. But obviously, you know, reality TV, people move on, and, you know, especially with a new record, you know, it sort of dies down after a while, which is quite nice for me going back to normal way of life, and that's what I wanted. But yeah, for that sort of period of time, it was a bit crazy towards the end. But has it impacted my life in a positive, really? You know, I've grown a good network of people that I probably wouldn't have done that. And then secondly, I think it's given me a lot of confidence. You know, if you're getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning, you're running around the street selling stuff, and then you've got to be put up to, you know, do a stand-up presentation in front of three senior business people with about four cameras shoved in your face, and then having to have a debate with Lord Chugger about X, Y, and Z. You know, if you can sort of do that, you know, you can sort of do a lot of things, really. So, yeah, sort of give me a lot of confidence and a good network for the future.
Yeah, so you kind of got the two strands. You got, like, the kind of fame bubble, which would have arrived with when the series went out on air, and then, like you say, from a career perspective, some of the skills which, you know, and confidence which you would have really, you know, had to, if you weren't already, sort of toughen up when you're speaking to Lord Chugger. And like you say, I suppose any presentation you do to this day is probably there's less anxiety, perhaps, I don't know. So yeah, that's a really interesting, like I say, on the two strands. And then how long did that sort of bubble last for, that kind of fame, would you say?
When it was on, because it was pre-recorded during October to December time, it was pretty hectic because you couldn't. And then obviously, I suppose you get to the new year, then it's probably a good 12 months, really, I suppose, until the next series starts. But then you still got dribs and drabs. And then it got to, and then about two, three years later, it was like, I'm sure I know you, Gary. Where do I know you from? I've seen your face before somewhere. And then it sort of gets to the, you know, 5 year period, and it's just like, right, back to square one, really. But yeah, it's a good couple of years where it's a bit hectic, and then it sort of drifts out to, I know your face from somewhere, but I can't put my finger on it, to normal life. So yeah, it's all good. Very good. Very good experience, definitely.
And then also on that point, I mean, you've got the, were there any negatives which came with that, as one question, and as a second question as well? Were there any sort of events you were suddenly asked to be attending, you know, in terms of that kind of maybe after work type thing? Were there more opportunities in that respect?
Yes, I'm just taking the questions one by one. The negatives, yeah, it's very invasive, very, very invasive. I mean, I'd be sitting here in my house, and the phone would be going left, right and centre from various newspapers, just asking you for stories, and not stories that everyone can see on the TV, you know, like what happened in the house, and, you know, did this happen, X, Y, Z happen, and, you know, people would, you know, don't get me wrong, you're not like David Beckham or anything like that, but when the show's going on, these tabloid newspapers, they want to write about it, and they want to write stories, and for those 12 weeks, you are quite current. So the invasion on your sort of privacy and what people want to try and sort of like write about things, it was pretty tough. Don't get me wrong, there was a lot of positive stuff as well. I got some good press, and I had a lot of good positive support from a local Birmingham charities and newspapers and things like that. So yeah, whilst it was a negative, I suppose it's the way around. Whilst a lot of positives, there was just a couple of negatives as well. But I suppose that's par for the course, really. But then Sorry, what's the second part of the question? Sorry.
So that was about the events you might have been asked to go to and things like that. Were there more opportunities which sprung out of the appearance, which led to maybe almost for however long a second kind of career, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, career, I'd say no, because there was a lot of opportunities, but nothing that people wanted to pay for, and rightfully so. You know, who wants to pay to listen to me speak for an hour? And I'd be embarrassed to charge people. But there was a lot of good stuff that came out of it that sort of like money can't buy. Like, for example, I got the opportunity to play on the pitch at Wembley, and as a big football fan, you know, going out there. I couldn't believe I was playing football, on the national stadium. Don't get me wrong, there was no one in the stand, but it was still a great experience being in the dressing rooms and actually being playing on the pitch and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of opportunities that sort of came out of it that, you know, you would never have had before. And there's some good, you know, good stuff that came out of it as well. So I grew close to a couple of great friends of mine now who run and created and founded a local charity called Love Brum. And they provide a lot of support to sort of like local charities and causes all within Birmingham. And, you know, all the money that's raised goes out to supporting those in the city. And at the time, because I was on there, you know, it was great to be an ambassador, which I still am for that charity. We got, you know, involved in some fantastic events. Like we ran the London Marathon, and because of the Apprentice as well, I got to like start the London Marathon with lots of like Chris Evans and all that kind of stuff. So it was things like that, really, that, you know, there was no, you know, what I call like money out of it, but there's some great opportunities that I could get involved with these local charities and give it back, and, you know, doing great things like London Marathon and playing on Wembley as well. So, you know, things like that, you know, they're the kind of memories as well that I'll definitely never forget.
Sounds like an ideal amount of publicity where you can get on the pitch at Wembley, but it's not so long lasting that, you know, you'd have the tabloid press, you know, haranguing you for the rest of your life, say, or something like that. You know, you had a good, you know, few things to come out of that, and like you say, the ambassador role for a charity and then other events, you know, maybe not running the London Marathon, but being there with Chris Evans certainly appeals. So there we go. A few questions about the built environment, if that's okay. So, you know, you worked Tesco and then moved to Whitbread. And what is it you enjoy about working in the built environment?
I think for me, it's just like developing something, getting it up and running, and then having a positive impact, whether it be a positive impact on that area or creating jobs. So if you said to me, Whitbread, Premier Inn, you know, you look at a bit of piece of land that could do some work, you do the deal, you get the property developed, but then there's nothing almost better for me, really, than going to the pre-opening night and you see the new staff turn up with the uniforms and you look back and you just see people operating. And whilst there's a hell of a lot of people that go into developing that building, you know, you've had that little bit of work and part of that development as well, that sort of gives it quite a satisfying feeling, you know, creating employment, having a positive impact on the area that you've, you know, invested in the area. And, you know, it's just that little couple of minutes where you sit back and, you know, you have that positive impact on what you've done.
So there's a real, human aspect to that where, quite often some people working in the built environment can be more interested in the kind of building side and the kind of, you know, from having Lego as children and then seeing that what they do gets created into something which everyone can live in, work in, etc. And then, you know, what are your future aspirations in the sector?
Yeah, I mean, just closing on the last question as well, I think what's good with the built environment is every building is different. You look at a Premier Inn, we build our strength on consistency in the brand and having that familiar environment for guests when they go in there, in terms of a great location, great bed, great bedroom with, you know, the various facilities, etc. But getting there, creating that room, everything's different, whether it be a conversion, whether it be a different kind of steel frame, concrete frame, you name it, and it's all got its challenges. So that's another bit that sort of I enjoy on the sort of technical side as well. There's always something that will provide a opportunity or a challenge. So I felt quite privileged, really, doing what I'm doing, and it's very highly motivating. But in terms of future aspirations, you know, who knows what the world holds for all of us after this period. But, you know, Whitbread have showed a lot of loyalty to me in terms of supporting me and getting me through my master's degree with yourselves. And I almost want to repay that loyalty by, you know, continuing our development in terms of our ambitious growth targets and making sure we do what we do best.
That's great. So, yeah. Be great when we can all, you know, be in a world which is one which we've known for most of our lives again, of course. But yeah, no, really, really interesting. Really enjoyed chatting through your studies, The Apprentice, of course, and then a little bit about your work and interest in the built environment. And what we like to do to end our podcast is just run through sort of five quick fire questions. So to finish off, our first one is, what was more difficult, competing on The Apprentice or completing our MSc in construction management?
Well, I think it'd have to be completing the construction management degree. the reason being is this: when I went to The Apprentice, I was just there on my own and didn't have two children to look after at the same time. Unfortunately, I came back and I had a few challenging times with children trying to play on my laptop whilst I was trying to revise for an exam or something. So, two great challenges, but two great outcomes, really.
Right, we'll put that on our posters now. Tougher than The Apprentice.
You do it,
Sammy. And our second one, I mean, you know, you mentioned the difficulty which comes with being a family man and working and studying. So you clearly, you know, have a lot of self-motivation, and that's come through with your apprentice experience as well, and your career. So, I mean, whether you're thinking of studying with UCEM and thinking about juggling all your, you know, responsibilities or becoming an entrepreneur, what advice would you give to someone who's thinking of either studying with us or wanting to start a business, say?
I think for me, this is only my personal opinion, I think you've got to enjoy what you do. I think if you've got a natural passion, it's like what I do now. Of course, it's challenging, it's long hours, challenging, you know, conversations, difficult problems to solve, etc. But I enjoy it. And if you see something that you do as more of a part of your life than work, for example, that would be my biggest advice. You know, some people might know their passion already, some people might not even know their passion exists, and I suppose I was quite lucky, really. I sort of fell into my passion, and it made me realise what I actually enjoyed doing. So regardless of what you're doing, I think if you enjoy it, that's a great starting point. And then secondly, you know, try and have these goals. I find if I write goals down, 9 times out of 10, I have a good way of achieving them or getting close to achieving them. But if I don't write them down and don't have any goals, then you're sort of just, next thing you know, 3 years have gone past and, you know, you've not done anything different to what you've done previously, really. But, you know, the good thing, as I say, with, you know, anyone wanting to join your course, the biggest thing I will say about the way it works is the flexibility. You know, we're all busy, regardless if you've got families, full-time jobs, etc. We've always got something to do in this world. But the great thing that the distance learning and the online course does, it allows you to work around your pattern, whether that means, you know, working evenings, weekends, have a couple of weeks off, but then work, you know, a whole week the following week. You know, that piece of flexibility allows you to work around it, as long as you're willing to put the effort and the work in that's required.
That's great. So you've heard it there. Have your goals, write them down, and yeah, if you're interested in obviously pursuing a career, getting further in the built environment, then yeah, obviously we are an option. Our third question here is quite a difficult one, actually. Who has been your favourite contestant on The Apprentice outside of Series 11, which you featured in?
Yeah, so I still do watch it. I started watching it with a different perception now. I sort of look out for things that probably people wouldn't do it. But I suppose I'm a bit biased. There was a candidate called James White. And before he went on telly, he did reach out to me on Twitter and we met up. And he's actually lived in Birmingham, so I'm sort of a bit biased there. So the guy that sort of from the same city, but he actually went on and he was the first ever joint winner. There was two winners that year. I think Lord Sugar backed them both. He works in recruitment, still speaks to him now, he does very well. And then in the most recent series, there was a guy, I don't know him, but he's a guy called Thomas Skinner. And he was like a West Ham fan, sold pillows, and he was a bit of a cheeky chappy. And he just showed that whilst he didn't win, you know, you can have different kind of backgrounds and ways of doing things. But I thought he came across quite well, and he was quite entertaining. But to be honest with you, because I've experienced it, my sort of, not sounding patronising, but my heart goes out to all of them because I know how tough it would have been for all of them, really.
Yeah, I think, like you say, it's more endearing when you see people on The Apprentice you can relate to. Some people, you know, there's no airs and graces, and I think that's great for the audience to see as well. I think they could maybe do it if they can handle 8 weeks away from family, friends, and speaking to your loved ones, so on a regular basis. So question four, and we're moving on to the final two, are to do with the lockdown. So if you could watch just one film during the current lockdown, what would it be?
My all-time film, favourite film, I always used to watch Snatch. I always used to watch that. Running around London, even though I live in Birmingham, I've worked in London for probably the last 10 years, so I sort of know the area quite well. And I don't know, it's just always one I could just switch on, almost know every single word to it, and I always seem to enjoy it. But I don't get a massive amount of time to watch stuff, if I'm being honest. So this lockdown has provided those opportunities. So I've just got into Prison Break. I think the majority of the world's watched it all now, but I've got into Prison Break over the last couple of weeks, and I've certainly got hooked on it. So I've just realised that there's 22 episodes in the first series, and then there's about another 5 series. So I might have a long way to go yet.
Yeah, we've all been there with the 22 odd episode series. It tends to be the American way, doesn't it? You know, unlike, say, the English version of The Office, with just six episodes per season. But yeah, Snatch is a great shout. One I very much enjoy, very funny. Yeah, good Guy Ritchie film. So yeah, that's a very good one, which I'm sure you could watch on more than one occasion as well. But yeah, Prison Break I've not got through to, and that and The Wire are two which a lot of people do suggest and say are great to watch. So they've got to join the list, I think. And then just to finish off, when we do come out of the lockdown, what is the one thing you're most looking forward to when life returns to normal?
For me, this is an easy question. It's people. I suppose the nature of what I do for the job, I'm quite lucky that I get exposed to a lot of different people from different backgrounds. And whilst I'm having a great time with my family at the moment, and, you know, I'm not going to get these years back. My son's 6-7 months old, so I'm having a lot of good time that I probably wouldn't generally get to, really. But whilst I'm speaking to people constantly online and almost feel like I'm seeing them, that day-to-day interaction of being around people is something I'm looking forward to. I'd be a liar if I said I'm not looking forward to the pubs opening and seeing a few people on a social front as well. And as a long-suffering Aston Villa fan, I'm quite enjoying not having football at the moment, but I think really I'd like to get back to watching a bit of that as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's a question whether it is football without the fans, you know, what they're talking about. And there's been talk of CGI fans and all this kind of stuff. But I'm on the other end of the spectrum, being a Leeds fan. So, yeah, sort of looking at that Premier League thinking, you know, we should be there. But yeah, certainly, I mean, the main thing is seeing people. Anyone listening can relate to the idea of going to the pub or sport, you know, or theatre or whatever it is where there's gatherings, which is just one of those really, you know, fundamental human experiences, which we all, you know, really are looking forward to once this is all over. So, yeah, no, that. Thank you very much for your time. It's been great discussing, like I say, studies with us, The Apprentice, your work, and then a few little fun questions at the end as well. So thank you for taking the time out. I don't want to keep you from your family any longer. You talked about you're with your young child, and yeah, all the very best with your future career. Thank you for your time.
No worries. Honestly, thank you for allowing me to basically share my success. And, you know, I've got nothing but good words to say about the university. Honestly, I really, really enjoyed it. It's a great challenge. You know, you don't get a master's degree just given to you on the plate. You do have to work towards it. But the material, the support you got, I could not recommend it enough. And you know, if anyone's listening out there and thinking, oh, I could do that, there's never a right time to start a master's course. There's always something that will potentially slow you down, but once you get into it and you get started, then I can't recommend it enough. Actually, a person I used to work with, he used to be a professional rugby player as well. He's a guy called Tom Smallbone. He played for like London Irish or London Scottish or even both of them. And I know he's, I think, halfway through his real estate course with yourselves at the moment as well. So I think that's the great thing about this course. You've got four different people from different kind of backgrounds. But ultimately, we're all here to succeed. And I wish everyone well. And, you know, I just wish everyone well, not only in their university course, but their future success as well.
They can do no better than, you know, emulate yourself with a distinction in whatever they might be doing. So, yeah. Proof that you can do your family life, your work, and your studies to a very high level as well. So yeah, thank you. Very kind words, and say all the best.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the UCEM Good News Podcast. For more info from UCEM, follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and/or Instagram.